Today, we continue with our annual tradition of listening to Alice's Restaurant by Arlo Guthrie and then talking to Stacy Pearl about Thanksgiving dinner. Arlo Guthrie is the son of the great singer-songwriter Woody Guthrie. He started performing when he was a teenager, and he wrote and recorded Alice's Restaurant in 1967. It was based on a true story that began on Thanksgiving Day 2 years earlier when Arlo Guthrie was 18. The song premiered at the Newport Folk Festival, and it became a major hit, and Arlo Guthrie went on to star in a film by the same name in 1969. Let's listen to Alice's Restaurant.
This song's called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant is not the name of the restaurant. That's just the name of the song. And that's why I call the song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Now it all started 2 Thanksgivings ago. It was on 2 years ago on Thanksgiving when my friend and I went up to visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice doesn't live in the restaurant. She lives in the church nearby the restaurant in the bell tower with her husband Ray and Facha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they got a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. And having all that room, seeing as how they took out all the pews, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, we found all the garbage in there, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the city dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, and headed on toward the city dump. Well, we got there and there's a big sign and a chain across the dump saying closed on Thanksgiving. And we had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one till we came to a side road. And off the side of the side road was another 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff was another pile of garbage. And we decided that one big pile's better than two little piles, and rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. Said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage, and wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obie, cannot tell a lie. I put that envelope under that garbage." After speaking to Obie for about 45 minutes on the telephone, we finally arrived at the truth of the matter and said that we had to go down and pick up the garbage, and also had to go down and speak to him at the police officer station. So we got in the red VW microbus with the shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, headed on toward the police officer station. Now, friends, there was only one or two things that Obie could have done at the police station, and the first was that he could have given us a medal for being so brave and honest on the telephone, which wasn't very likely, and we didn't expect it. Another thing was that he could have bawled us out and told us never to be seen driving garbage around the vicinity again, which is what we expected. But when we got to the police officer station, there was a third possibility that we hadn't even counted upon, and we was both immediately arrested, handcuffed. And I said, "Obie, Don't think I can pick up the garbage with these handcuffs on. Said, shut up, kid. Get in the back of the patrol car, and that's what we did. Sat in the back of the patrol car and drove to the, quote, scene of the crime, unquote. I want to tell you about the town of Stockbridge, Massachusetts, where this happened here. They got three stop signs, two police officers and one police car. But when we got to the scene of the crime, there was five police officers and three police cars, being the biggest crime of the last 50 years. And everybody wanted to get in the newspaper story about it. And they was using up all kinds of cop equipment that they had hanging around the police officer station. They was taking plastic tire track footprints, dog smelling prints, and they took 27 8x10 color glossy photographs with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. Took pictures of the approach, the getaway, the northwest corner, the southwest corner, and that's not to mention the aerial photography. After the ordeal, we went back to the jail. Obi said he was gonna put us in the cell. Said, kid, I'm gonna put you in the cell. I want your wallet and your belt. And I said, Obi, I can understand you want my wallet so I don't have any money to spend in the cell, but what do you want my belt for? And it said, kid, we don't want any hangings. Said, Obi, did you think I was gonna hang myself for littering? Obi said he was making sure, and friends Obi was, cause he took out the toilet seat so I couldn't hit myself over the head and drown. And he took out the toilet paper so I couldn't bend the bars, roll the toilet paper out the window, slide down the roll and have an escape. Obi was making sure, and it was about 4 or 5 hours later that Alice, remember Alice? It's a song about Alice. Alice came by and with a few nasty words to Obi on the side, bailed us out of jail. We went back to the church, had another Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, and didn't get up until the next morning when we all had to go to court. We walked in, sat down. Obi came in with the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back each one. Sat down. Man came in, said, all rise. We all stood up, and Obi stood up with the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures. And the judge walked in, sat down with the CNI dog, and he sat down. We sat down. Obi looked at the CNI dog. And then the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and looked at the CNI dog. And then the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and began to cry, cause Obi came to the realization that it was a typical case of American blind justice and there wasn't nothing he could do about it. And the judge wasn't gonna look at the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. And we was fined $50 and had to pick up the garbage in the snow, but that's not what I came to tell you about. Came to talk about the draft. We got a building down New York City, it's called Whitehall Street, where you walk in and you get injected, inspected, detected, infected, neglected, and selected. I went down to get my physical examination one day, and I walked in, I sat down, got good and drunk the night before, so I looked and felt my best when I went in that morning. Cause I wanted to look like the all-American kid from New York City. Man, I wanted to feel like the, I wanted to be the all-American kid from New York, and I walked in, sat down, I was hung down, brung down, hung up, and all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things. And I walked in, I sat down, they gave me a piece of paper, said, kid, see the psychiatrist, room 604. And I went up there, I said, shrink, I want to kill. And I want to see blood and gore and guts and veins in my teeth. Eat dead, burnt bodies. I mean, kill. Kill, kill, kill! And I started jumping up and down, yelling, kill, kill! And it started jumping up and down with me, and we was both jumping up and down, yelling, kill, kill! And the sergeant came over, pinned the medal on me, sent me down the hall, said, "You're our boy." Didn't feel too good about it. Proceeded on down the hall, getting more injections, inspections, detections, neglections, and all kinds of stuff that they was doing to me at the thing there. And I was there for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. I was there for a long time, going through all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things, and I was just having a tough time there. And they was inspecting, injecting every single part of me, and they wasn't leaving no part untouched. Proceeded through, and I when finally came to see the very last man, I walked in, sat down after a whole big thing there, and I walked up and said, "What do you want?" He said, "Kid, we only got one question. Have you ever been arrested?" I proceeded to tell him the story of Alice's restaurant, Massacree, with full orchestration and five-part harmony and stuff like that, and then all the phenomena stopped me right there and said, "Kid, did you ever go to court?" I proceeded to tell him the story of the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one. They stopped me right there and said, "Kid, I want you to go over and sit down on that bench that says Group W. Now, kid." And I walked over to the bench there, and there's Group W is where they put you. If you may not be moral enough to join the army after committing your special crime, and there was all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly-looking people on the bench there. There's mother rapers, father stabbers, father rapers. Father rapers sitting right there on the bench next to me, and one, he was mean and nasty and ugly and horrible and crime-fighting guys are sitting there on the bench. And the meanest, ugliest, nastiest one, the meanest father raper of them all, was coming over to me, and he was mean and ugly and nasty and horrible and all kinds of things. And he sat down next to me and said, "Kid, what'd you get?" I said, "I didn't get nothing. I had to pay $50 and pick up the garbage." I said, "What were you arrested for, kid?" And I said, "Littering." And they all moved away from me on the bench there, the hairy eyeball, all kinds of mean, nasty things, till I said, "And creating a nuisance." And they all came back, shook my hand, and we had a great time on the bench talking about crime, mother stabbing, father raping, all kinds of groovy things that we was talking about on the bench. And everything was fine, we were smoking cigarettes and all kinds of things, until the sergeant came over, had some paper in his hand, held it up and said, "Kids, this piece of paper's got 47 words, 37 cents, it's 58 words. We want to know details of the crime, time, crime, and that's the kind of thing you got to say, pretend to about the crime, want to know the rest of the officer's name, and that's the kind of thing you got to say." And it talked for 45 minutes, and nobody understood a word that he said, but we had fun filling out the forms and playing with the pencils on the bench there. And I filled out the Massacree with the four-part harmony, and wrote it down there just like it was, and everything was fine. And I put down a pencil and I turned over the piece of paper, and there on the other side, in the middle of the other side, away from everything else on the other side, in parentheses, capital letters, quotated, read the following words: "Kid, you rehabilitated yourself." I went over to the sergeant and said, "Sergeant, you've got a lot of damn gall to ask me if I've rehabilitated myself. I'm sitting here on the bench. I mean, I'm sitting here on the Group W bench because you want to know if I'm moral enough to join the army, burn women, kids, houses, and villages after being a litter bug." He left at me, said, "Kid, we don't like your kind. And we're gonna send your fingerprints off to Washington, and friend, somewhere in Washington, enshrined in some little folders, a study in black and white of my fingerprints. And the only reason I'm singing you the song now is because you may know somebody in a similar situation. Or you may be in a similar situation. And if you're in a situation like that, there's only one thing you can do. Is walk into the shrink wherever you are. Just walk in and say, 'Shrink, you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant,' and walk out. You know, if one person, just one person does it, they may think he's really sick and they won't take him. And if two people do it in harmony, they think they're both faggots and it won't take either of them. And if three people do it, can you imagine three people walking in, singing a bar, Alice's restaurant, and walking out? They may think it's an organization. And can you imagine 50 people a day? I said 50 people a day walking in, singing a bar, Alice's restaurant, and walking out. And friends, they may think it's a movement. And that's what it is. The Alice's Restaurant Anti-Massacre Creed Movement. And all you gotta do to join is to sing it the next time it comes around on the guitar with feeling. So we'll wait till it comes around on the guitar here. Sing it when it does. Here it comes. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant." That was horrible. You want to end war and stuff, you gotta sing loud. You could put a lot. I've been singing the song now for 25 minutes. I could sing it for another 25 minutes. I'm not proud. Or tired. So we'll wait till it comes around again. And this time with four-part harmony and feeling. We're just waiting for it to come around is what we're doing. All right now. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant, excepting Alice. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. So walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Da 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 da. At Alice's restaurant.
We've just heard Alice's Restaurant by Arlo Guthrie, recorded in 1967, based on a true incident in 1965 on Thanksgiving Day. The Alice in the song was Alice Brock, who actually lived in a deconsecrated church in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and invited people over for Thanksgiving dinner. Arlo Guthrie actually bought the church in 1991 and converted it into the Guthrie Center, which is a non-denominational church and cultural center, and people can still go there for Thanksgiving dinner. Officer Obie's chair sits in the chapel. Officer Obie was William Obenhein, who was the chief of police in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. He died in 1994. When the song was made into a film in 1969 called Alice's Restaurant, Officer Obie played himself. During the course of his life, he actually also posed for a number of Norman Rockwell pictures. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's all for Alice's Restaurant for now. We'll hear it again next year at this time. We're going to take a break, and Stacey Pearl will be with us talking about Thanksgiving dinner in just a few minutes. Please stay tuned. And I'm delighted now, as always, it's a Thanksgiving tradition every year to welcome Stacy Pearl, executive chef with Walter Burke Catering and host of the KSFR program Mouth of Wonder, which airs on Saturdays at 10:30 in the morning. Welcome.
Thanks. It's great to be back.
It's great to have you, and it's always great to talk about Thanksgiving. I have to confess. I'm going to make a full confession. I'm cooking cannelloni.
I heard that. I heard you say that to Diane Karp, and I was shocked.
I know. It's because one very important person in my life who's going to be with me is allergic to turkey.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know, and rather than go the sort of tofurkey direction.
Oh, yeah, just don't even try that.
You don't even go there.
No.
And you just go somewhere else. But every other year, I've always cooked a turkey, and let's talk about Thanksgiving dinner.
It's a great meal. It's the only meal that people entertain with. So people get really nervous about it because some of us who cook professionally cook large meals all the time. But for some people, this is their make it or break it day. So what I always like to do is think of ways to make it less stressful.
Uh-huh. And how do you make it less stressful?
Planning. Planning is the key. If you do not have a defrosted bird in your refrigerator right now, you're kind of in trouble.
You are in trouble.
You know, shop ahead of time. Desserts can be made ahead of time. Side dish. Think about your menu. Plan it out. The other thing is, if it's too stressful for you, make your friends bring part of the meal. That's always a good strategy.
Excellent point.
Yeah, because, you know, people want to contribute, but doing the whole meal for one person is oftentimes too much. So think about what your strengths and weaknesses are. Think about your oven space. Sometimes people don't think about it till the last minute that they can't fit their meal in their oven.
They can't fit the turkey and then all the other things that
exactly.
they are baking and
exactly.
the pies. And
yes. You know, some people who are super planners, will pre-plan. They'll put the empty dishes of what they're going to be baking in the oven and make sure it all fits ahead of time. That's not out of line. That's probably a good plan.
That's a very good idea.
You know, so that's the thing. The things that make this stressful is the unknown. You could eliminate the unknown.
Now, you are a chef, and as a chef, you are always coming up on new ways of doing things and new recipes. Thanksgiving is so traditional. Is there anything new in Thanksgiving?
There is. You know, no, but first of all, I have to say, I support the traditional. But I've heard mutterings amongst the people that they're bored with Thanksgiving. So I thought I'd bring in some new ideas. But personally, I go old school all the way.
Okay.
But suppose, like, you're just sick of roasting your turkey. Did you know that you could deep fry your turkey?
I have heard that. I have also heard about the burn marks that
you
are still on.
You need to have the fire department on speed dial. Would be very good. But it's actually the reason people do it is because it produces a great product. Having said that, this is not something you do want to do in your kitchen. This is something you want to do outside.
You want to do it in the center of a gigantic empty parking lot.
Absolutely. With, seriously, a fire extinguisher nearby. Once you get it correct, and there's lots of ways you can do it, and you could go online and get the information. The reason that it's such a dangerous procedure is because, as you might know, water and oil do not mix. And a turkey is a wet thing. When you put a wet thing in a pot of 350-degree bubbling oil...
Especially a 25-pound wet thing.
Yes. Well, that's one of the tips. If frying a turkey, you want to do small turkeys. Because when you put it in this pot of oil, the oil rises up and flames occur quite often. And it's just an unbelievable... I have done it before and I was shocked at how dangerous it was.
So you've really done it?
I have done it. I have done it, yes. In the
once?
Parking lot at work once. And I swore I would never do it again.
Okay. So let's shelve that and move
okay.
on.
Unless you're like a pyromaniac, let's skip that one.
Okay.
Jacques Pepin just had an article in the New York Times where he suggested pre-steaming your turkey. Another way to get moisture into it. And steaming it in a pot and then using that liquid that accumulates at the bottom to work into your gravy, which, as far as I'm concerned, probably produces a good product. It's a lot of extra process. All these things are ways to get rid of a dry turkey. The fact of the matter is, turkey is not inherently dry. It's only dry because people overcook it by hours. If you cook it properly, all you need to do is start with a good bird, which is probably my biggest tip for Thanksgiving. Do not get a frozen, if you can, and if you can afford it. Granted, get whichever you can. If you can get a fresh bird, the quality is going to be so much different. And if you could just follow some simple instructions and don't overcook it, you don't need to brine it. You don't need to deep. You just roast it in the oven, old school way, and it's delicious.
So I have made some perfect turkeys, and I have made some dry turkeys. And I've made a dry turkey that had the meat thermometer, and I supposedly had the right temperature, but it was still too dry.
Right. Yeah, you can't go by those things, I don't think. I think the only way to tell if your turkey is done is to use a proper meat thermometer, and everyone should have one. They're not expensive. They take all the guesswork out of cooking. You take a meat thermometer, you insert it in a variety of places within the bird, in the thick part of the breast, where the wing meets the major bone there. You put it in a variety of places, and you want it to get to 165, and then it's done.
Yeah.
You know, those plastic things they put in that pop out, I mean, sometimes they're broken, and sometimes the skin covers over part of them and they don't work properly. I wouldn't trust those things. You know.
So 165, so that is your key to not having a dry turkey?
Yes.
Now, what about covering it and things like that?
There's, as in everything, you know, there's as many turkeys, there are many theories. I personally feel that what makes a turkey moist, besides not overcooking it, is basting it.
Yes.
Always cook it in about 2 inches of liquid water. I basically make my basic turkey procedure is I make a rub of salt, pepper, garlic, and paprika with some oil and some water, and I make it into a paste, and I brush it on the turkey. Then I take whatever extra is left in the bowl, add a lot of water to it, and I put that in the base of the pan. And then as it cooks, every 30 minutes, I take my cheap old plastic turkey baster, and I take the liquid from underneath, and I put it over the top. And it makes a really great moist turkey. If the skin gets too dark, I cover it with foil. But frankly, you shouldn't have to. People just make this way more complicated than it needs to be.
What are some of the different herbs that people can put or different things they can put on the surface of their turkey?
Oh, the possibilities are endless. One of the things around here that people get into is they'll use smoked paprika, which is a lovely additional light smoky flavor, fresh sage, thyme, rosemary. There's a very nice French herb mixture called Herbes Provence that I'm very fond of using. Sometimes people will take a little bit of apple cider, which has a little sugar in it, so it helps give it a nice caramelized flavor on the top. I know you, Mary Charlotte, would love to baste it in bacon.
I have used bacon.
Which is an excellent choice.
I have draped thick organic bacon all over the turkey.
How can that be bad?
I saw on Facebook somebody had a woven bacon cover over an entire turkey.
The things
turkey.
That people can do with bacon on Facebook is just mind-boggling. Somebody made a bikini top.
I saw that.
Wasn't that lovely? That
yes.
Wasn't you, was it?
I found it and I put it on. That was not my physical body, no.
So, I mean, basically what you want to do is keep the skin moist. That could be done with fat, with juice, with oil. Some people put balsamic vinegar on there, which is very nice. Anything that has a little bit of sugar in it will add a slight sweetness to the skin, but will also, over time, tend to burn. So if you're going to brush your skin with balsamic vinegar, it's going to be very dark. Now, it's not going to be burnt, but it will have that illusion. It won't have that Norman Rockwell golden color. It'll have a slightly darker color. So if you're going for the photo op, that might not be your best choice.
Let's talk about stuffing.
Oh, who does? Okay, are we going to have the in the bird, out of the bird conversation?
We can.
Well, okay, I personally feel, because I cook turkeys for people who take them to their homes and then serve them up, that I go for safety. And for safety's sake, I do not cook the stuffing in the bird. Because that holds heat, and that will cool slowly, and that's where your bacteria is formed. So if you're in your own home and you want to do that, and a lot of people have these very romantic visions of the turkey stuffed and, you know, picking at the little end crispy bits and stuff like that, go for it. But remember, a stuffed bird cooks much longer.
And I have done that. In fact, I've never not done that.
Mm-hmm.
And I am still alive to talk about it.
That's good.
And it's really good because it gets the flavor,
absolutely,
the juices of the turkey seep into the stuffing. And I've made it with wild rice and made it, mm-hmm, with breadcrumbs. And
stuffing is a great vehicle for all kinds of fantastic flavors. You know,
dried fruit.
Dried fruit is an excellent addition.
Bourbon.
Let's start with the bread. I mean, you can use, you know, Pepperidge Farm bread mix. You can have some old baguette in your house and cube that up. You can make cornbread and make cubes out of it and
That's
dry that
really
out in the
good.
Oven, which is delicious. You could use focaccia. You could use ciabatta. Pretty much any bread. Or if you're not doing the bread thing, you know, if you're a gluten-free person, go with wild rice.
Yeah.
You know, and then you could include meat if you want. You can, you know, sausage is great in there. I make a great old-school New England oyster stuffing. Absolutely delicious. Not for everybody, but absolutely delicious.
Giblets.
And the other thing I wanted to say about stuffing is, if it's that flavor that you want because it's cooked in the bird and it gets the juices, what I do is I take the turkey drippings from the pan, and that's what I use for my stuffing. So you're still getting that exact same flavor.
Okay.
And then the advantage...
You mix it all in.
I mix it all in. And then the advantage of cooking stuffing in a separate pan on the side is if you put it in the oven and put some more butter on the top, it gets crispy bits all over the whole top.
Mm.
So no one's fighting for the crispy bits.
I've also done both, where you have it on the side and you have it in the center. The people who don't like giblets, you make
right.
the separate one. You can even have a vegetarian stuffing for
Absolutely.
Your vegetarian
guests. You know, if you have vegetarians at your dinner table, they could eat most of the sides. And then all you need to do is supply them with some kind of protein. And my best tip on that is don't try to replicate a turkey out of tofu. I don't think anyone's fooled by it.
No.
I don't think it tastes very good.
Carob syndrome.
Yeah. I mean, it's better to have all good quality real foods than something that imitates something that's not as
exactly.
good.
Exactly. Like fake sugar.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you haven't really accomplished anything. But having said that, make sure you give your vegetarians a main course. I mean, I don't think if they just have side dishes, that's really satisfying
no.
enough. You know, one of the things I like to do is take a half a butternut squash, which is delicious and it looks beautiful on the plate. It has a lot of presence. And make a wild rice pilaf or make a vegetable curry. And make sure that those people are very proudly served an actual entree instead
yes.
of like, oh, you just can't have that. We'll just eat that side stuff. I mean, you know, it's kind of not fair.
And even for those of us who are making cannelloni or lasagna, I make a cannelloni with half of it will be with the beef inside, and then the other half with the portobello mushrooms.
Which are so meat-like.
Otherwise, exactly the same recipe.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so good that even meat eaters will, like,
yes.
eat it all.
Portobellos are a great ingredient. They definitely have a very satisfying texture and weight to them. I mean, something simple like, your vegetarians can eat all the side dishes, and then you can make them some grilled portobellos, and then, you know, just put maybe some caramelized onion on it, a little roast pepper. And I think they'd be happy with that.
We're talking to Stacy Pearl, executive chef of Walter Burke Catering, about Thanksgiving. So have we exhausted the turkey, so to speak?
I think so.
All right.
My one last thing I want to say about the turkey is if you're going to spend money on one ingredient, spend it on your turkey.
And, you know, I think what the reality is that people have to listen to this show year after year, because by the time you get to now, Wednesday morning, tomorrow is Thanksgiving, it's too late to take this advice.
I kind of feel bad about that.
I know. But someday we'll do it 2 weeks in advance.
Maybe. We should try that.
Yeah. But anyway, this is a tradition, too, and I think people can listen year after year. In any case, and the other thing I want to say about turkeys, and you've said this many times before, you don't have to get up at 4 in the morning.
Oh, God, no. You know, I was just...
Because then you'll have that overcooked dry turkey.
People always ask me how many hours do you start at 3 in the morning. I've never met a turkey I cooked more than 3.5 hours.
Right.
And I cook turkeys for up to 24 pounds. Absolutely not. You know, the basic rule of thumb is 12 minutes per pound. But I know, granted, I cook in an industrial kitchen and we have a convection oven, which is very strong and very efficient. But yeah, no turkey takes 6 hours. It just doesn't exist.
Right. And do you put it on real hot and then turn it down?
I just go 375 the whole time.
375 the whole time.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. I kind of keep it simple.
We're done.
Yeah.
With turkey.
We're done with turkey.
All right. But just don't forget to baste it. Okay, now, side dishes.
Side dishes, that's the most fun part. And, you know, you've got your traditional, you've got to have some kind of potato something. And you've got to have some kind of stuffing something. And I think a green vegetable is good. We've discussed before that, you know, like salad has no part of this meal. But, you know, there's that famous green bean casserole with the canned cream of mushroom soup and the onions. And I think that's kind of a hideous dish. But if you take that same dish and use fresh ingredients, like suppose you use beautiful French green beans, and not canned, and then you add some fresh caramelized cipollini onions, and you add some shiitake mushrooms, and you make like a reduced cream sauce, you've got a fantastic dish. I think that exact same recipe works with peas, if you like peas. But the new vegetable, and I've tried to push this last year but didn't go for it, is Brussels sprouts. Brussels sprouts are great at Thanksgiving. They get done a million different ways, and if people think they're bitter, it's because they've overcooked them. But one of the things I've started doing with Brussels sprouts is making a Brussels sprout slaw. So you take them and you put them in, I use my food processor and I shred them, and I make this very nice lemony slaw, and you put some toasted pecans in it, and it's just delicious. It's light and fresh, and it's something people are like, wow, I haven't had that before. So it's nice to add a new element to your meal.
Now, okay, I mean, I've had them and they're kind of bitter sometimes, and maybe it's just because they're not cooked properly, but is there any kind of caramelized something that you can add to make them
Mary
better?
Charlotte, all you need to do is cook them with bacon. Brussels sprouts and bacon, natural combo. Can't go wrong.
Is there anything that doesn't go with bacon?
Not yet, but I'll keep you informed. Another really great vegetable that I'm adding to my menu this year is celeriac, or celery root. Which is a winter root vegetable. It's actually a tuber, and it is available right now. And you just, it's very ugly when you get it. It looks dirty. You have to kind of, with a knife, you can't just peel it. You have to, like, really clean it on the outside. You could cube it up, boil it, and you could puree it into mashed potatoes. And it is the most delicious thing in the whole world.
It is very good.
And it's something that, you know, will just sort of freshen up, like, wow, a new taste. Absolutely delicious. You could also shred it up and make a kind of slaw or celery remoulade, which is a traditional French salad, which is excellent with turkey. So that's another cool ingredient you can add to your menu this year.
It's interesting because when I've been to Germany and you talk about celery, they think celery root.
Right.
You can barely even really get celery there, or at least that's the way it used to be. And when we think of celery, we never think of celery root.
I know. Whenever I buy it and I go to the cash register, the woman looks at me and she says, what is that? Where did you find it?
Right.
Having said that,
is it a weapon?
It's grown locally. I got some organic celery root at the farmer's market last week. And really delicious. And it has like a 4-month shelf life when it's solid. So, you know, it's kind of a fun thing to have. And it, you know, it's just sort of a nice new flavor to add to your menu.
Now, do you mash your potatoes or what do you do with them?
We make a dish which is famous in my family. This is the only dish my mother is known for, called potato nick. And what that is mashed potatoes cooked very, very soft. And then my mom takes one or two onions and chops them up and sautés them with your typical Hungarian mix of salt, pepper, garlic, and paprika.
Nice.
And lots of oil. Mixes them with the potatoes. Then takes a baking dish, a little more oil on the bottom, puts them in, smooths them on top, and then bakes them. And it gets a crust on the top and the bottom.
Ah.
And it's just the most delicious
dish. With
the
potatoes in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. It's delicious. Not
I'm
hard to do.
That.
Not hard to do at all. We've always had it as part of our Thanksgiving meal, and that's always our potato dish.
And for those who aren't as into potatoes, there's always sweet potatoes, which are Thanksgiving tradition.
Sweet potatoes are great.
I love them.
You know, and, you know, something that you can do if you have kids at the table and they're kind of like, I don't like anything. You know, you can make sweet potato fries.
Right.
You can now buy them already made and just fry them up if you're feeling like, I don't have time for another side dish. But a simple roast sweet potato or a candied sweet potato, or if you want to really do it, you can do that sweet potato thing with the marshmallows on top. But frankly, I wouldn't touch it. But a lot of people love it. I know. You know, it has a little...
I have never gotten into marshmallows. Even when I was little, I thought they were kind of gross.
They are. They're kind of creepy. But homemade marshmallows are really good.
What?
Yeah. I've made some.
I didn't know. I thought they were an inherently factory-made.
No, the French got into making them, and you could do homemade marshmallows and dip them in chocolate and make little confections, and they're divine.
All right.
So, and then you can put bacon in them.
You know, you could put bacon in anything. Okay. So then the next thing is dessert.
Desserts. Now, this is where, if desserts are not your thing, this is where your friends come in.
Right.
You know, they could either make a dessert. I mean, frankly, a pumpkin pie, it's hard to get easier. And my personal suggestion is follow the recipe on the can of pumpkin puree. You can't make a bad pumpkin. It's delicious. A pecan pie, very, very simple to make.
One of the things that I noticed is that you can buy those cans of pumpkin puree and the ingredients are 100% pure pumpkin.
Absolutely.
Then you can also buy pumpkin pie mix, which is, I think, 99%, you know,
sugar. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend that one. Yeah, I would never buy that. It's simple enough to put your own ingredients in.
Right.
And that's where, you know, if you're interested, you could add your agave, if that's a sweetener you prefer. You can add some fresh ground cinnamon. You could add some cardamom and make it a little more exotic. I mean, that's where you could sort of improvise.
What else do you make besides pumpkin pie? First of all, do you make your own crust? Do you make a regular
always.
Kind of crust that
I
you make for an apple
make my
pie?
Own crust. And you know what? I made my crust last week and froze them. No reason to stress about that at the last minute. When you have time, you know what I mean? That's always, and I always keep frozen crusts in my freezer. And I use a very simple pie crust. It's actually Susan Purdy's recipe. It's made with butter and Crisco, trans fat-free Crisco. And pie crusts do not get harmed in the freezer at all. And then you have them when you need it. And then in 10 minutes, you can make a pumpkin pie.
Very nice. You That's know? Part of the planning theme that
Absolutely.
We started out with.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, something like that. Like, don't crusts are something to be done when you have the time to sit back and enjoy them. Don't stress about them. Make them really pretty. I take them and I put sort of paper between each crust. I stack them in fives. I wrap them in plastic wrap. And then I have them and they're ready to go.
It's also something that you can do once the turkey is gone in the oven.
Absolutely.
That's when I do it.
Absolutely. And then, I mean, how lovely to be able to serve a warm pie. You know, so right, the turkey comes out of the oven, your oven is still hot, you've got your crust pre-made, you make your filling, which I make my pumpkin pie filling. I use the food processor because I puree in some crystallized ginger, and it helps it to whip it up and to grind it up in there. And that literally takes 10 minutes. You throw it in the crust, and then, you know, 35 minutes later, you're taking a fresh, warm pie out of the oven. I think that's the perfect way to go.
And even if you haven't pre-made your crust, it's very easy to do it. Okay, you've done your turkey, and you've done your stuffing, and you go in the oven, and then you go wash your hands, take a deep breath, and take out that flour and sift it, and take out your Crisco and your butter and make your pie crust. And I think for me, it's part of the ritual, and it's really fun. Mm-hmm. And my particular thing is apple pie.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of secrets of apple pie, which we've discussed before, but it's very important to reiterate them. If you're going to use Granny Smith apples at this altitude, you have to actually steam them in advance.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise you've got hard apples or else you've got a burned pie crust.
And there's nothing worse than hard apples.
In apple pie.
Yeah.
Very bad. Or if you use a softer apple, what would that be? Golden Delicious.
Golden Delicious, actually, which is a pie an apple I'd never recommend. At sea level, it works great here. And the other thing you can do, which I worked with the students at Santa Fe Prep recently, we did apple pies, is what we got is like five different varieties of apples from the farmer's market and mixed them all together.
Nice.
So when we pre-cooked it, so some got real soft and made the filling and some stayed firmer, and it made a beautiful multi-leveled kind of pie.
Very interesting. And, okay, so again, if you do as many people do and as I do, you have all your ingredients, but you don't start doing anything until about 9:30 on Thursday morning. First you do your turkey, then you put it in the oven, then you take your apples and you cut them up and get them ready, you steam them if necessary, and then you soak them in a bowl with rum and brandy.
Ooh la la.
While they're soaking, you make your pie crust. And by the time you're ready to put the filling in the pie crust, which contains flour and brown sugar and all that stuff, your apples are very nicely flavored. And what's great about that is that nobody says, oh, that tastes like rum and brandy. They say, oh, what flavorful apples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's a great idea. And, you know, the other thing you can do is you could take some of that liquor and mix it into whipped cream. Or whip it into the cream and then top it with that.
Very,
if you want to reiterate that sort of flavor.
Yeah, and then nothing goes to waste.
No.
You use the whole animal.
Yeah, but there's some other things you can do also. Cobblers. If crust, like, just freaks you out, you could take those same apples, put them in a pie pan, make a crumble topping, which you can, you know, get a recipe off the internet in 5 minutes, which is just cinnamon, butter, brown sugar, and flour. Put a crumble top on it. You don't even have to make crusts.
And that topping is so good.
And it's delicious. And who doesn't love that? And, of course, a little ice cream can't hurt to go with that.
And bacon?
And bacon. I do a cranberry cobbler. I mean, I just love cranberries. And the basic recipe for apple cobbler works for cranberry. You have to up the sugar a little bit. But that's a really nice one. And if you really want to get fancier, if you have, like, maybe some kids helping you, you can make those cobblers in little individual ramekins. So that everyone has their own little portion, which is very nice.
Are those little white ceramic things?
Mm-hmm. They're about 4 ounces each. And, you know, that's a nice way to go, too, if you want to get really sort of custom and do little individual ramekins. And the other thing I want to mention is pears. Everything you do with apples, you pretty much do with pears. And if you don't want to get the whole pie thing going, and this is a great do-ahead dessert, a simple dessert of poached pears is so delicious. You could do them 2 days ahead. And then the syrup that you simmer them in, you keep them in that. So they soak in that. They just get more and more tender. You put a little cinnamon stick in. You could poach them with some wine. Some Zinfandel is very nice. That's a nice lighter dessert. Sometimes by the time you get to dessert, you're pretty full.
Right.
You know, so it's, and the other thing I like to always have is just a bowl of fresh fruit. Because sometimes you can't have dessert right away. Sometimes you have to have dessert at, you know, 11 o'clock at night, which is fine too.
Well, and the fresh fruit helps you to digest all those heavy fatty things that you've just eaten.
Yeah.
Now, the Thanksgiving dinner itself, we always make a nice table, but you can't put too many centerpieces and things like that on the table because you actually have to have a place to put the turkey and all of that. But sometimes I find that we have to pace ourselves. Like, you don't even serve dessert right away.
Yes. I always think that's a good idea. I think that when people are done, sometimes we get up from the table, we'll go into the living room, relax on the couch, let the tryptophan start taking effect. And then maybe, you know, an hour later, say, would anybody like coffee or tea? And have dessert there. Yes, it's not like a race. You know, it's not like how much food can you shovel in the shortest amount of time. And I think people need to remember that the cool thing about Thanksgiving is it's a holiday for me that's just all about getting together with all the people I like and enjoying them. You don't have to go to synagogue or to church. There's no religion involved with it. It's a time to be thanks for your friends and family.
Right.
So it's good to, like, remember to enjoy that.
Right, and you don't have to buy any presents.
Right. There's no guilt involved.
It's right. And you get to, I mean, whatever your relationship is to American history and all of that, you can embrace it or you can completely forget about it. But you can, I mean, I think giving thanks is a pretty universal sentiment.
Yeah. And, you know, we've just been through an election. We can be thankful that's over, you know.
Yes, indeed.
And you know, it's just, I always, it's my favorite holiday. And the other thing is if it's super stressful for you, have your friends come over and help you.
Right.
They can come over and eat, and they can come over and do dessert. But it's also nice, you know, if they'll say, oh, you know, do you need a hand? You know, someone can help set the table. And, you know, make it an event that all your friends and family participate in, if that works for you. For me, personally, I could have everything done before anybody shows up. But some people, that's a really helpful thing. So go for it.
And it's fun sitting around in the kitchen and hanging out with people.
It's where everyone wants to be all the time anyway.
Exactly. And you don't get to do it enough because we have these overstressed, busy lives.
Mm-hmm.
Now, going completely back to the beginning, do you do appetizers?
I don't. I don't do anything. People come in, we have beverages. We have liquid appetizers.
Right. What are those?
Well, we usually just open some nice wine. Occasionally we open some champagne. One of my favorite cocktails this time of year is Gruet champagne and a local apple cider. It makes a fantastic beverage. And so we'll have some of that. I mean, sometimes I'll put out some nuts or stuff like that, but yeah, it's not a meal where I kind of go with the past hors d'oeuvres.
Oh, speaking of nuts, that's another good thing to put in your stuffing.
It is. But make sure, this is Santa Fe, everybody's allergic to something here. Make sure that people know that there's nuts involved.
Right.
You know what else is a really, chestnuts. If you can get chestnuts, they're a wonderful thing for the holidays. Sometimes I saute them with green beans. And I think you can get them around here. And they're a very holiday special ingredient, I think, chestnuts. Everyone gets all excited. You know, certain ingredients are just inherently sexy.
Nat King
chestnuts
Cole.
Are one of them.
Right.
Right. And Nat King Cole, he's inherently sexy.
You know, another thing, based on what you just... Let's say you are having Thanksgiving dinner yet again, and you're inviting your friends, and you find it stressful. Next year, have one of your friends have it.
Yes. I mean, there needs to be more of that. A friend of mine was telling me that she got tired of being the only one willing to host the event. Absolutely. I think, you know, it needs to be a place where people have a place to sit. You don't want to, you know, this is not a meal you want to eat in your lap. So you want to go to a friend's house that has a proper table.
Right.
But, yeah, I think that's a great idea. Pass around the responsibility. And also, if you've invited a bunch of people over and it's your house, I think it's okay to have your friends, if they volunteer, to help you clean up.
Oh, yes. Oh, they'll volunteer.
Some of them will.
And some of the others will be
busy doing something else.
Eating your desserts.
Yes.
On the couch.
Yeah, make it an interactive experience.
Stacy Pearl is executive chef with Walter Burke Catering. She's with us every year on Thanksgiving, the day before Thanksgiving, when we always play Alice's Restaurant and talk about Thanksgiving dinner. And she has a show called Mouth of Wonder, which is on Saturday mornings on KSFR at 10:30 in the morning. And it's mouthofwonder.com.
Yes.
Where there are recipes and
yes.
all kinds of
I'll
good
have,
things
I have
there.
A special Thanksgiving segment that I run, which will have my top, I think, 10 turkey tips, which the same every year. You know, just be conscious, do a good job, shop ahead, plan, and enjoy yourself.
Planning is the word. Stacy Pearl, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure as always.